I'm the doctor. These are my new best friends, Ryan, Graham and Yaz.
Hello there, this is the Target Files, episode 85, and we're going to discuss Doctor Who Season 11, The Witchfinders, written by Joy Wilkinson and directed by Sally Aplahamian. Hi there, this is Alex in Exeter.
And this is Mike in Swansea. Hello.
Well, we had a sort of another historical episode, I think the third so far of this season, and it sort of started out on one angle, I think a lot of these episodes seen to this season, and then moved to a completely sort of more traditional, scary sort of Witchfinder general episode where, you know, they think the Doctor's a witch, and we get great sort of bits and that. Well, I never know with these episodes this season, because on the first watch I wasn't that impressed. Well, I've watched it again probably like you, Mike, today, and I thought it actually did improve. So we need to discuss the whole Chris Chibnall thing, where we seem to find on a second watch it's better. I don't know why that is.
In a run of episodes at the moment, did finish with this Witchfinders episode. Sorry, does finish next week with It Takes You Away, on a run of episodes that Chris hasn't written. Historical, probably one of the standout episodes of this season, along with Rosa and Demons of the Punjab, but definitely more on a second watch.
Yeah, I think so, because when I watched it on the Sunday night, I thought it was good, and I thought, you know, the sort of plot had good pace and good, quite scary monsters, the sort of mud witches, and but I was still doing other stuff. I was sort of checking my phone, and that was, I don't like doing what I sometimes end up doing because of not that bothered. And then I watched it this afternoon, and I really enjoyed it a lot more. I thought I concentrated more on it, and I thought it actually had a good storyline drive.
Yeah, is it possibly a little bit too layered, maybe, for, you know, if you've had a heavy weekend for whatever reason? I'm not going to put down our intellect and say, you know, it's too much of a thinking episode, but there's certain layers which you sort of devour or seem to notice more on a second watch.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not too sure if you actually needed to know about the whole Witchfinder general history period of King James, because I think that was quite well explained if you didn't know about it. I think it's like the Punjab episode, where it actually did make you go and Google the history bit of that period, which is always a good thing, I personally think, if it gets children to look at and adults to look at the sort of history of the episode, I think. And I think the you know, there's a nice sort of feeling to the episode. Well, I do agree, maybe on a Sunday when you're a little bit tired, we've had a busy weekend, it sort of maybe felt a little bit too much again. So I think this was another episode where, I hate to say it, I think it needed two episodes. I think it needed to be spread out a little bit more.
Yes, I'm going to say it now. We have spoken about this each week. Boy, would I love a Target novelisation of this. I think it would be so so expanded upon, so embellished.
Oh, definitely. Oh, it'd just be so, there's so much more there. The, you know, sort of episode glances at, but doesn't give you enough to sort of go, you know, why was that important? Or the sort of whole sort of back history of the village, and, you know, the reason the Menlock are sort of in the hill, would be lovely to have more detail. I think one of the classic sort of history sort of Doctor Who Target writers to give this a good, you know, backstory. So I think it'd be brilliant.
Yes, I'm going to say it. The main guest star, Alan Cumming. Possibly the episode becomes a little bit too much about him.
Yeah, I did think that, actually, to be honest. And I just didn't understand where his performance was coming. It was like, you know, very sort of, you know, he'd watched, you know, Blackadder or something, and saw how Hugh Laurie played Kings and Queens, and this went very camp, very over the top. And I don't know, I thought his character worked better when you didn't know who he was. You sort of the, you know, the sort of person in the background. I thought that worked slightly better.
Stole every scene he was in, and there was many humorous moments within the dark nature of the episode. I think I read an interview with Alan Cumming, and he said he wanted to pitch it between the politicians you've had in the past from time to time, who are Scottish, and possibly try and inflect a bit of English into their accent. I think he mentioned a politician called Malcolm Rifkind, who was Defence Secretary once.
Yeah, I can see where he's coming from, because, you know, there's definitely bits of Scottish, though, and then it goes very English and very possible what Alan Cumming can do. And I thought his performance was great. I'm not saying that. So, you know, there's some lovely interaction bits between, you know, the Doctor and his King James, and, you know, Ryan as his sort of person he really likes a lot in it. And I thought there was some very nice scenes between both of those two characters, and you know, when you know the Doctor's trying to convince him with Grey, I thought.
Yes, and you know, the whole idea of the psychic paper almost backfiring on the Doctor due to that century's idea of sexism, isn't it? You know, he can't quite believe that the Doctor herself would be the head witchfinder.
Oh, no, no, that's a great bit there. And, you know, he instantly makes Graham the head witchfinder, because he can't have a woman as a, you know, the head witchfinder. That was a lovely bit of comedy there between, you know, Graham and the Doctor. I thought that was great fun. Underlying sexism, you know, where, you know, a woman couldn't do the man's job. You know, it's, again, I'm sure it's going to get complained about. You know, it is very in your face in this episode. I think it's a good thing, because it shows, you know, how, in the end, the women are the strongest characters, I think.
Yes, and they're talking about it being, you know, oh, your head is full of gossip, he says.
Yeah, there's a lovely little lines there between, you know, sort of King James, and he sort of first appears and meets, you know, the Doctor, and can't make her the witchfinder yet because he's a woman, you know, just sort of, I couldn't help smiling when I saw that and thinking of the sort of great bits in Tom Baker and Blackadder, those whole woman jokes, and thinking, yeah, it's sort of very of the time, but not now, really. It sort of has changed.
Yes, his character is introduced in a very sort of camp manner, and towards the end of the episode, you know, it could be said he's partially the villain as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, that one moment when, you know, the Doctor has it all under control and they're going back into their prison, and then he just does the most typical thing, because he can't get his head around thinking what they're not witches, or, you know, they're not, you know, creatures, basically, you know, and blows her up. Why did you do that sort of thing?
He does steal the scenes he's in general, Alan Cumming. But we did have two other superb female guest stars. Becca Savage, that was Siobhan Finneran. She gave a great deal of menace, you know, to the idea of her being possessed at times.
Yeah, I really liked her character, because you start off thinking she's sort of a nice person who's trying to save a village, and by the end she's gone completely mental when she's taken over by the Morlock, and sort of made them and she makes a really good sort of, you know, her acting's really great when they add the sort of CGI and the sort of prosthetics for her character.
You know, a nice character, Albert. You know, she has drowned 35 witches, we find out at the beginning.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you're really nice to your village, but you've drowned 35 people in there, which is like half the village. You know, very quickly you see the sort of flip side of her, I think.
And we also had Tilly Slade playing Willa Twiston.
Yeah, she's really good as well, and I think she'll do really good in other roles, I think, because she's sort of, you know, made out to be a really sort of, you know, impoverished sort of character. I don't think does believe in witchcraft, but sort of goes along with it to, you know, sort of keep herself safe, really. You know, there's some lovely bits between her and the Doctor.
I mean, she plays it superbly well. I think you and I both did have issues with one of the supporting female characters, you know, who also meets a sort of deadly end in Kablam the last week before. We weren't convinced by the actress's performance, but this young lady just really put a stamp on the character, didn't she? The vulnerability of somebody of her age under those accusations in these times.
Yeah, I had no problem with believing her this week. She was 100 times better than the woman in Kablam. You know, she got you immediately from, you know, the sort of minute you sort of met her, and you know, her grandmother dies very nasty because they think she's a witch, and that sort of whole compassion with her, it's just brilliant. You didn't have any doubt that she wasn't a good actress this week. You know, they were both brilliant, I thought.
So, do you feel the female characters had greater depth this week, as it was a female writer and a female director?
I would say yes, because I think the whole angle of the episode is, you know, about how, you know, witchcraft represented women, basically, and how, you know, there was basically, because you were a woman, you were a witch, so there was no way around it. And that whole stupid, you know, ducking stall water thing where, you know, if you were ducked, you were a witch, if you lived, you were a witch, so you were sort of damned whatever way you went. I think, yeah, the female 21st century aspect of being, you know, feminism has definitely come out in this episode, and I think it's a lot stronger performance for the sort of women characters, though I would say that the, you know, the male characters come over very well as well. King James is great, and sort of Graham and Ryan have good bits as well, so I think there's a nice balance.
Kudos to Jodie as well, getting into that river. I expect, like Peter Capaldi, when I met him filming Robot of Sherwood 4 years ago, she may have had a wetsuit on under her costume, but still, I think this was the second block of filming, so that would have been earlier this year, around winter time before spring.
I've got a feeling this is the one what was shot near Southampton, Salford, where it was freezing, when it was freezing. I think this is the shot, it's basically all shot then, I think it was. So I think there might have been a heat suit or something under that, because I believe this is when we had snow, and it's shot in a little place near Southampton, wasn't it, I think?
Oh, yes, when Jodie met a lovely young man with learning disabilities. And
Yeah, then that's when this was all shot, I think, and it was freezing. It was like we had snow in Exeter here, so I know it was freezing there in Southampton.
And I think, yeah, that clip is still online of her meeting the young gentleman with a learning disability. Yeah, and he's very inquisitive about a doctor, but she manages to be very compassionate with him without giving anything away, such as the need for no spoilers under the chib.
Yeah, because it was just you know, sort of in that period where we knew absolutely nothing, wasn't it? So, you know, he does it really well, the young, very inquisitive, nice child he sort of talks to there.
And yet again this week we had the Graham and Ryan double act. Such a superb pair, really. The wit just keeps coming from them, from each different writer we get.
Yeah, this is this whole thing I don't understand, where on, you know, social media, having three companions is really getting highly criticised. Well, I think the balance of the three companions, or fans, or friends, if you're allowed to call them, works really well in this season. I don't mean there is a problem. I think you get that great sort of balance a lot of time with, you know, Graham and Ryan, and then you get the sort of more interesting bits, more sort of, you know, helpful bits with so I don't think there is a problem with having three companions. I know a lot of people don't like it. Well, I thought, Ryan, and they sort of great double act with Ryan and Graham again this week with the whole Witchfinder general sort of joke.
As you mentioned, Yaz, we get to see her compassion. The Doctor spins it to her what she's about to go and do. Yaz herself, when she offers to go and speak to Tilly, the girl, she says, yes, Yaz, you do some liaison work, which is, of course, related back to her job as a police officer.
Most definitely, and, you know, sort of get trained in that sort of thing, so she'd know what to do. And I think the whole thing you find out about her, you know, being bullied at school and that, you know, and it sort of works really well. The companions aren't over the top and annoying. I think the problem is a lot of people have the whole unbalance of, you know, the sort of Peter Davison period where it didn't work. I don't think it's three companions together. I think this works really well. The three companions seem to balance each other out. I don't know if it would work just having one of them, because, you know, that's the whole fear in the next season, what they're going to just put it down to Yaz, isn't it? I think the rumours I've heard.
Quite possibly. We shall wait and see. I think they're going to begin production, filming-wise anyway, in January, but I think they've started pre-production already.
Yeah, that would be good, because I personally want the three companions. I know they're all still in the New Year's Day episode. It says they're all there, so we can see photos of them there. So I don't think they're going to change it, maybe to the next season if they do change it.
Moving towards the climax of the episode, a great scene, very reminiscent of the zombies in The Curse of Fenric, as we had a bit of a major change from one of the characters.
Yeah, there was a really nice sort of near the end where, you know, the big aliens are sort of, you know, released, and you see, you know, what they are really. And I was like, I didn't describe it. Ginormous sort of very nasty CGI sort of snake bit. And there was a very nice CGI in this episode, I thought. And yeah, I thought they were quite, I think if you were little and young, you would find the mud witches and the sort of snake things quite scary, I think.
One throwback I noticed, I've not seen it mentioned too much online by anybody else, but when Becca transformed into one of the, oh, what are they called? Morlocks, wasn't it?
Morlocks, yes. Is it Midlock or Morlocks, isn't it?
Something like that. She, the sound effect was very reminiscent of Attack of the Cybermen, when Colin or somebody shoots one of the Cybermen in the TARDIS.
Yeah, I noticed that. I just had a thought, but isn't the weird creatures in H.G. Wells' book called Morlocks as well, I think?
Yes, I think so. I think we may be getting them slightly wrong by calling them Morlocks.
I think the way
it's something similar.
Saying, I think it's like Menlock or Morlock. It's some word like that, isn't it?
Or Marlocks or something, yeah.
Marlocks, let us know what the right pronunciation is.
Yes, let us know at DW Target Files, folks, and please do rate and review us on iTunes and the other services from wherever you may get to download this show.
Yeah, that'd be great, because we love a review. There are some lovely little bits of CGI with that, you know, the transformation. Nice people, well, I'd hardly call it nice people at this period, but in sort of nasty, sort of weird, sort of tree characters is the best way of describing them, I suppose.
Just thinking about the scene between Ryan and King James, where King James mentions that he didn't have his parents around. Do you feel this episode is perhaps being, as you alluded to before, almost a revenge plot against women by somebody who's been let down earlier in their life, or they feel they've been let down by the absence of a mother and a father?
Yeah, maybe. I think it is an important part of history, because that's what did happen. And I think, you know, if by saying that, you know, the villains have to be, and maybe it's a flip side sort of outlook, you know, having a woman writer saying what, you know, women would have been thought of as the revengeful characters back then. I think it's sort of trying to look at it from a time period, but also with the sort of 21st century Me Too sort of political outlook, I think.
The key scene at the end, we see a bit of villainy again from King James at the end by ending the head Morlock's life.
Yeah, definitely. There's that sort of big shot where he, you know, he sort of plunges the sort of flaming torch into the lamp, because it's the wood from the thing, it kills him, and it's sort of the great big green sort of explosion. But the doctor, I think the doctor's great there not to be happy, see the reason why he should be killed, basically.
And were you happy with the layering of the plot, with the idea of the tree as the prison?
Yeah, sort of. I thought it could done a little bit more, maybe. That sort of felt a bit rushed at the ending bit. That's like, I thought the actual ending of the episode was a little bit rushed, to be honest, where you just see the sort of TARDIS disappear, and there's that great bit beforehand. But I thought it maybe felt a little bit rushed at the ending, to be honest.
Yes, but we had a bit of a throwback to the previous series. Two observers watching the TARDIS pull away, that was very much in the mould of the classic Doctor Who.
Yeah, I suppose so. I would agree. I would just like the episode to be a bit more tailored off, maybe, you know, because it just felt like a little bit jarring when it went from that scene straight to the sort of credits at the end. But, you know, I can see where you're coming from.
And it felt like another sort of concrete grounding move from Jodie as the new Doctor, when she's actually, they have the close-up shot of her by the TARDIS door giving a piece of wisdom to the people as she's about to leave.
Yeah, I really like that close-up shot. He looks so good in it, and it's sort of that bit of wisdom which he hopes will sort of carry on down the ages, and it's very sort of, you know, Doctor of, you know, I'm trying to think, that bit reminded me a bit of Sylve, that did.
Yes, and for me, Peter Capaldi in the Robot of Sherwood episode.
Yeah, there was definitely bits of his sort of, you know, graveliness at the end when he sort of gets very annoyed with King James for what he's done, really, I thought.
A great bit of humour by Bradley Walsh, when he quotes, King James thinks it's Ezekiel, but it's from Pulp Fiction as well, and he says, no, not Ezekiel, Tarantino. Yes.
That is great. It's so funny, those sort of bits where he's sort of trying to mock up history. Don't know where to put this one, really, because I think it's a really good episode now of What's It a Second Time, which is weird, because I didn't enjoy it mainly on the first watch. It seems to be a second watch with Chris Chibnall episodes are better, so I recommend you watch it more than once, and it will get better. So, and I like the performances. I thought, you know, the performance of, you know, Cumming playing King James was really good, and had some great bits with the Doctor, and I thought all the female actresses were really good. So it has gone up in score for me. I think maybe I think an 8.5, I think.
Yes, to me, I'm going to take it from a 7 on the first watch to an 8 overall. Can't quite rate it as highly, probably one of the best, another historical, but not quite the polished quality of Demons of the Punjab and Rosa. Enjoyable enough, very much elements of classic Who, as you've mentioned, the shot reminiscent of Fenric with the zombies walking along, the TARDIS scene disappearing at the end, the whole general happy bouncy opening where they ask the young child if it's Halloween or celebration, and he says, no, it's only Sunday. You know, we've seen that sort of happy sort of introduction before, and then things take a dark turn. Haven't really mentioned Sagan's score again yet, Hal, but very atmospheric. Very atmospheric this week, yeah, very atmospheric.
Well, it's interesting, I don't know if you've seen, because on Twitter, it's about a dozen people he works with on this week. There is individual music people this week for the cello and the violins, and all little bits, apparently.
Yes, quite heavy on the sort of atmospheric bass, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, and that's from a cello, apparently. You basically stripped down the cello sound after, like, a couple of hours at Abbey Road, apparently, and that's what gives you that sort of menacing bass sound.
Is he based at Abbey Road for all of this season?
I think so. I think they recorded the whole thing at Abbey Road, so we can hope that there will be a CD or download out at some point.
In about 3 years, you know, they still haven't released season 9, have they? So, they only just have released season 9, I think.
Season 9 came out earlier this year, and, you know, nothing of 10 yet, which would be good.
8 from me, and you said an 8.5, Al.
I did an 8.5, because I'm being a little bit generous there, because I didn't think it was as good, as you said, as the other two historic episodes. I do think the historical episodes have definitely been the standout ones this season. I think next week's looks very sort of interesting. It looks very much more of a sort of stripped down sort of horror thing, I think. Hello there, this is a bit of Hughes news, and this is Alex here. Basically, we have the rating figures for The Witchfinder, and just on watching, it has gone down a little bit, but it was still 5.66 million. The fourth most watched thing, which for a Sunday night in Great Britain is not bad at all. And I expect when it's added to the catch-up and the recordings and watching online devices, it'll probably go back up to 7, I reckon. And the overall scores for everything with Kerblang were 7.46, which is really good, including it was the first episode they moved to 6.30 instead of 7, and you would expect ratings to go down a little bit, but they seem to have stayed in a nice, healthy spot.
A wonderful picture released from the New Year's Day special, where Jodie has got herself a scarf, as Tom Baker did.
We have indeed. A lovely sort of couple of photos have come out from the New Year's Day special. Jodie wearing this sort of bright new rainbow scarf. It's maybe like Tom Baker's, not as long by the looks of it. And then a sort of another one with Ryan and the team with Jodie sort of on a table, sort of bones, and with a sort of mythological book. What I think people have worked out is from the sort of Saxon age. So they reckon it's going to be something involving Saxon, maybe Vikings or something. Sort of going to be quite interesting thing, especially on New Year's Day as well, not being a Christmas episode this year.
Synopsis wise, it looks like there are various threats going across the centuries back on Earth around the New Year, so that should be an interesting concept.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think, you know, it's got a good writer and director, so it should be an interesting one for, you know, a director from the sort of Peter Capaldi era now doing Jodie Whittaker. We can only hope he does actual episodes in the season. Old Wayne Gipp, who's a really good director.
Yes, did Oxygen last year, I think, didn't he?
He did. I think he did part that free bit with the sort of weird AI sort of virtual monk thing, the sort of middle bit of the last season of Peter Capaldi.
One of the pyramid at the end of the world or extremists or...
It was one of those sort of mad, sort of weird, sort of CGI monk things, what didn't make much sense, what were good.
I had heard various rumours just on the forums that the New Year's Day special may end with a cliffhanger, which will possibly show us the direction the series will take for series 12. So my speculation, my thought might be we may see for the first time Jodie in a cliffhanger facing some of the classic villains. We might see a Dalek, or we might see a Cyberman at the end of New Year's Day leading into season 12.
Well, yeah, that would be good. Or maybe Rassilon, because they've just recast Rassilon, haven't they, for Big Finish, so maybe they might sort of try and combine that.
Well, that would be excellent if they joined up with TV and audio Doctor Who again.
Yeah, that would be good, because they've just, I think, Big Finish have commissioned the guy who played the demon headmaster in many, many years ago. I think it's Terence Hardiman, was it? I think it's us who played him.
Terence Hardiman,
that's it. He's going to be Rassilon for the Big Finish Gallifrey Time War box that was coming out next year.
Plus, he appeared in Matt Smith's second episode, The Beast Below.
Oh, of course he did. Yes, of course he did. Yeah, that, I forgot about that. Well, you know, it would be interesting if they sort of connected it all up. A lot more Big Finish are for, you know, involving the sort of new era of Who now.
Just seen the big news in the last 2 days. Anyway, it was Monday the 26th this week. A certain major character from the Tennant era is getting her own spin-off show now.
Oh, is she? I haven't seen that. Who's that?
It's Rose Tyler, the Dimension Cannon.
Ah, that's what I did see something to do with that on Twitter, and I wasn't too sure what it's about, because I haven't really looked at...
We are also getting Camille Kajuri back as Jackie.
I thought they would have.
Sean Dingwall back as her dad, Pete. Interestingly, we're also going to get Mark Benton back as Clive from the Rose episode, so I wonder when this will be set, because we did presume that he passed away in that episode, didn't we?
No, we did, didn't we? So you never know, there might be something. Well, I know it could be, because it's probably going to be in the other reality, isn't it?
I've just seen the synopsis does tell us, Al, a parallel universe version of Clive.
Go, it's going to be like, you know, where we first, you know, saw Dad Pete, you know, in the other reality, probably.
But we're getting four episodes. It'll be The Endless Night by Jonathan Morris, The Flood by Lisa McMullen, Ghost Machines by A.K. Benedict, and The Last Party on Earth by Matt Fitton.
All really good Big Finish strong writers there. That is going to be a treat of a box set, that will be. Unit new box set came out last week. with the Master leaving a very nasty surprise for the new unit team to deal with. It involves the lovely Wirren. I believe you mentioned, what I haven't seen yet, the fact that there's the next Blu-ray collection box set is going to be Tom's final season, didn't you say?
I think season 18 now.
Blu-ray box set, whenever that comes out next year, because we're still having a bit of delay on the Peter Davison first season Blu-ray box set, which is now out on, hopefully, December the 10th. Are you going to go and see Creed 2 at some point this week?
I certainly will. I want to rewatch a few of the Rocky films, especially Rocky 4 just before it.
I was tempted to do that. Are they on sort of streaming services? I couldn't see any on Netflix. Are they on Amazon?
I've not looked on Amazon yet. You may have to pay to rent them along with Prime membership.
There's nothing on Netflix. I put Creed. So I haven't actually seen the first Creed film.
I do. It was on ITV last weekend, so it may be on their hub. It may be on their hub, Al, if you look at it.
Yeah, I'd have to look, because it normally is on their hub. Yeah, I want to go and see that. It's not. I thought it was out on Thursday, but the Odeon down here has not got it the Friday.
No, it's Friday here as well.
It is Friday, because it says the 30th.
I think it did good business in the first few days in the States, so...
Well, the trailer looks interesting. I've watched the trailer with Sly Stallone doing his doorbell.
Yes, and he's putting the M16 back on now for one final Rambo film again next year.
Oh, that will be good. Well, as you said, speaking of Rambo, if you love a Rambo film, they've all just come out on a beautiful 4K Blu-rays, the Rambo films have. I think that's why, probably, to get you in the gear for next year.
And I don't know if we're getting the cinema re-release over here, but Superman the movie has just come out in lovely 4K, so look forward to that.
I don't know if we're getting a cinema release, but I think they're going to do the same with Die Hard as a 4K disc, because that is getting a re-cinema release on the 6th of December, I think it is.
Oh, fantastic. I still have the Blu-ray, but that's one of my all-time classic favourites. I did watch, as it was Thanksgiving last Thursday in America, I did my annual rewatch of the greatest Thanksgiving movie, which is Planes, Trains and Automobiles.
Oh, that film is just fabulous. It's hilariously good fun, that is.
Betamax Video Club podcast, where two gentlemen reviewed it, and one of them pointed out it has so many different layers. It's very, very funny, you know, just the whole big swearing F-word scene with Steve Martin when you're young. But there's so much more layers to it when you're older, when you see the sort of very sentimental twist at the end.
Oh, yeah, that lovely bit at the end and sort of the whole sort of twist. I think it's one of those films, you watch it when you're young, you think, oh, it's just very funny, and then there's a lot more to it when you're older, I think.
And it'll be 25 years in April since he died, but I'm still mourning John Candy. You know, I loved his films.
He was just great. Whatever he did, he was great.
Yeah, films like The Great Outdoors I need to watch again, and I splashed again recently with Tom Hanks. There are some quite un-PC sort of sexist moments in these films back in the 80s, but there's a certain charm to other parts of the script and things.
I definitely think Shape of Water, you know, the brilliant, brilliant Del Toro film is basically Splash, what with better CGIs, really.
Yes, that Betamax video podcast I mentioned before also did Splash in the last few months, and the lady helping to review it there, she mentioned that similarity as well.
Yeah, it's The Shape of Water, really, really good film. I don't know if it's good enough to win an Oscar like it did win an Oscar, but it is a beautifully shot film, Shape of Water. I watched it recently on 4K disc on RTV, and it looked gorgeous. And I can see why it did win lots of cinematography awards now, because it's a stunning film. Well, yeah, Splash is just great, because it's sort of, you know, boy falls in love, but you can't have her because she's a mermaid. It's sort of a great film. Tom Hanks and Debra Harry. I'm going to say I've said her name wrong, though. I know I have. Is it Debbie Harry or no?
It is Daryl Hannah.
Daryl Hannah, that's it, because it came back later in a great sort of cameo in Kill Bill for Tarantino.
I couldn't find it anywhere in basically the local HMV. Oh, well, yeah. It wasn't on Blu-ray, but I did get it on DVD for about £3 a few years ago. So
that film needs to be cleaned and put onto 4Ks. It's such fun.
There's a few I haven't yet found on just normal Blu-ray before 4K. I went looking for Top Secret with Val Kilmer, and I went looking for The Karate Kid Part 2. The first one was out.
I have this problem still. That's why I have about a shelf on my bookcase still of DVDs, because there's a lot of films what are still not on either Blu-ray or 4K yet.
Went back onto Netflix after a few months break and started to watch the prequel to Breaking Bad called Better Call Saul, which is about the earlier adventures around about set in 2003 of Saul Metzstein, the character in that one, who is a very sort of dodgy lawyer, and you see the basic conniving and things that he gets up to. Very enjoyable.
Yeah, I never got into Breaking Bad, but I know people who love Breaking Bad really like that. It's meant to be really
good. It does take about 6 episodes to get going, Breaking Bad, I'd say.
Well, yeah, that's a good thing. I think, you know, you want that sort of, you know, I always think a drama should take a while to get into. I think, what have I been watching? I've got that Mrs. Wilson to watch that was on last night. It was meant to be good. I saw the preview, what is, you know, just to make us really happy, they put out a little taster of the new season of Luther, which looks really good.
Can't wait for Luther.
Oh, have you seen, it's on the iPad, they put out yesterday as a little Christmas present, a right 5 minute taster of the new episode, basically. And
is he in the club with a gentleman in nightclub?
I can't say the words, it's quite strong language in it, but it's really good. It's like a 5 minute little taster of the new episode. We can hope it's not two episodes this time. It's a nice long season.
And there was a lovely clip, we're getting it on Christmas Day, from the BFI, from a screening of the new Watership Down. Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that on Christmas Day? That is definitely on Christmas Day.
That's the strong rumour. I think the Radio Times Christmas is out in about a week, so we shall see. There's a lovely story from James McAvoy voicing one of the rabbits on stage, and he has a T-shirt that he's owned for a long time, you know, with a poster on the front of it of the original movie, and he said, you know, he was wearing that when he found out he was cast, and he actually spoke to Nicholas Hoult on the set of the one of the latest X-Men films about it being voiced, and that's how he got him into it as well. So the only
sort of thing we're going to say about it is it is a lot more cuddly than the brilliant original film.
Yeah, it's that sort of drastic voice, 40 years old now, the movie version, 1978.
Really stands out, though. I saw it quite recently, I think, because of the score it's got and the fantastic voice performance in it. I think it does still stand out.
And John Hurt's menace just stands out a mile in that film.
The man is a scary rabbit. You wouldn't want to go anywhere near him, basically, as a rabbit. He is a serious, scary rabbit. What, that whole film, I think, you know, would you show that film to children these days? I was showing it for my GCSE English Lit course. That's when I was first showing it by one of my teachers, as, you know, to get you to discuss sort of, you know, bunnies not being cuddly things. I was showing it, and that scared me for days.
Yeah, and then you just go straight into the Bright Eyes song at the end, and it's very sort of melancholic.
It's very melancholic, that original sort of Bright Eyes with that beautiful music that's all the way through that original film. So we will see, because I know they've made it a little bit more cuddly, and there's a female bunny rabbit in it, isn't there, played by Olivia Colman, I think, is voicing that. So we will see. I think it's going to be a bit more cuddly.
Olivia Colman, I'm in effing everything, as she said in The Five-ish Doctors.
Well, she is. You know, nothing what Olivia Colman doesn't get into, which is a good thing.
Looks like we're getting a bit of a supernatural, possibly alien menace in Doctor Who out in the cabin in the woods in Norway this week. Al, are you looking forward to It Takes You Away?
I am indeed, from that little trailer where you saw this sort of, if it's shot very bright with lots of blues and whites, and it makes you feel freezing like you should at this time of the year, then I still love it. And I think there's some sort of menace in a little cottage in Norway. And I wonder, is that meant to be the Norway where we had at the end of, when Rose and the other David Tennant Doctor vanished into the other world? Is it meant to be there again, I wonder?
Oh, quite possibly. There may be a link there to Bad Wolf Bay, but this looks to be more sort of in the mountains, doesn't it? Around about a lake rather than the coast.
But it still looks stunning. The sort of little clip you saw at the end of this week's episode, it looks very cold and menacing, I think.
I just think we're getting the wonderful comic actor Kevin Eldon as a guest star this week, so I hope he's...
He can do creepy as well as comic.
If he can do creepy possession, or perhaps it'll just turn out, as quite a few episodes this season have, to be a human protagonist.
Yeah, that does seem to be an issue, what he does want to put forward this season, but you don't have to have a monster. You have a human who gets turned into a monster, or a human who does the monstering, I think. It is seem to be one of his issues, I think.
Next time, Doctor Who Target Files, will be discussing It Takes You Away, written by Ed Heim and directed by Jamie Childs. Contact Doctor Who Target Files on Twitter at @DWTargetFiles, leave a message on our Facebook page, and please do rate and review us on iTunes. Thank you so much for listening.